Wow, that arrival process was amazing! I feel like I've walked 100 miles!
Thank God we're near the front of the line. It's been nearly 2 hours.
Next in line. Welcome to Canada. Passport, please. What's your business here?
I am here for the Canadian dream of home ownership. Do not read this part. Through money laundering and mortgage fraud, start reading again here. But first, I am entering your country as an international student. Once I finish my degree in 3 to 5 years, I plan to build my Canadian real estate empire and sponsor my entire family, do not read this part, and bring them to the Great White North to drain the system financially. I kid.
You're funny. I hope you brought a lot of money with you.
Define a lot. I'm here ready to work and earn my way through school and to save up for my first Canadian home.
You and a million other people, bud. Join the club. What school you going to?
It's Denning Joe's Level Up Academy Institute of Learning.
That sounds promising. What's the address you're going to be staying at while you're living here?
Oh, the nice man, Mr. Shyster, that my parents paid $50,000 to take care of me while I'm here, is supposed to meet me at the airport. I haven't been able to reach him since we wired him the money, but I'm sure he'll be here really soon.
Oh, we got a line for people like you. It's over there to your right. It says taxi. I hope you brought your own tent. We got a tent shortage over here in Canada, you know.
Why do I need a tent?
You'll see. Enjoy Canada. Line to the right. Next in line, please.
I gave you the time for the Canadian real estate show.
Live from Toronto, it's Sunday noon.
At lunchtime. I hope you guys had a really good time watching the Tom Story Show this morning. And here's the following act.
Yeah, if you still got any left in you.
Any little bit of, you know, real estate itch you have left to scratch. That's we're here right. to scratch it for you. We're here to talk about it for real estate.
The last Absolutely. Little bit left. And while you're here, if you haven't already, I mean, you may as well subscribe. Like,
get it out of the way.
We have the smallest, now,
and then you can just enjoy the rest of the show.
The tiniest audience ever. If every one of you would just share this with somebody who might like it, we could grow the audience from like 7 to 14 really quickly, TK. And then we're going to be famous. And then you know it will all be worth it.
I think it's worth it regardless, Daryl. You just, and I, we yes. together have created something. It we doesn't have. Make us much money at all.
No.
You know, really, actually, we lose money.
Lots.
But overall, our purpose is there, which is to share the real estate news with everybody from coast to coast, mostly in Toronto.
Basically Toronto, yeah.
Basically Toronto. But look, guys. We're trying, all right? We're trying.
For Christ's sakes.
We're trying. Like, I don't go outside of the GTA very often, all right?
So I barely leave my house.
Hand experience. You guys got to let me know. Drop it in the comments. Yeah. Tell me what's going on.
We'll have anybody on. Anybody. Basically. Vancouver, Montreal.
Have you seen our guests lately?
We try and stay away from Montreal, though. Have we had guests lately? We've barely had any guests. It's like people are staying away from the show lately. I feel like we're repelling people, but I'm having a good time. Show's doing great.
I think if you ask people, then usually you have a better chance of them coming on the show. But when you don't ask them and we just kind of carry on with just you and I, usually, you know, we usually don't have a guest for those
we get
shows.
A lot of people that are asking to be on the show lately, but it's like when I check into them, it's like if I'm not interested at all, I'm pretty sure that our audience will not be interested much, at least.
We got good screening here, guys. We got the best screening all of YouTube.
In all of YouTube.
We don't just let anybody on here.
It's not true, though, either. I mean,
we are looking out for you guys.
We've had some stinkers, but today, wow, today's going to be action packed because there's not much going on out there right now. So we need a good guest to spruce things up around here because
I need to hear some drama.
Do you feel like anything's going on? What's going on out there? Rates are coming down. That's pretty crazy, right? Fixed rates are coming down. Isn't that true? I feel like
that's what you could do if you happen to be getting a rate at this time. You know, like if that benefits you because you're one of the few people who are actually buying something.
Yeah, refinancing because you're fucked right now.
Right? Yeah. So it's like, great, you know, super. But that is such a marginal effect when you actually look at the overall market.
I know a guy, he's dealing with this B lender right now, and his rate just went from TK. Are you ready?
Yeah.
Rate just went from 12.25 to 12.15. And he's ecstatic.
Jump on it.
He's ecstatic.
It's jump on that.
Can I get that new 90-day lock-in on that, please? Like, as of now?
Yeah.
I think they're going to keep going down for a bit, TK. I get this feeling. I've been saying it for a year. Eventually, I'll be right, too. I mean, it's not...
This is what the Carolyn Rogers was saying about in her latest interview that's been going around is basically what they were saying is, look, we tried to lower housing prices. All right. We put rates to a point where they were enough to contain the economy. They were enough
should have worked.
they were enough to make changes. And we thought that housing prices were going to go down in tandem. And guess what? They're not. So it means that there's a fundamental issue with the whole entire Canadian real estate market, which is a lack of supply and excess demand. And created an environment where people just couldn't even afford to make the payments on the houses they already owned, never mind buying new ones, people kept on buying. And until we start seeing something on the supply side, housing prices will find a floor that will prevent them from going much lower than that. I mean, this is what the Bank of Canada is saying. We all know that they're not going to be the ones who are going to predict the future here by any stretch of the imagination.
Well, but everybody that's predicting right now seems to be predicting rate cuts sooner rather than later right now. The Bank of Canada is going to have to cut rates sooner than expected. Q1 of 2024, rates cut, says whatever his name from wherever the fuck. And all of the banks are the ones making these predictions, right? Because, I mean, they have to pay interest too, don't they, TK?
All the people making those predictions, though, have something to gain by an increase in market activity, whether it be the mortgage market, the real estate market, the stock market. Like, just read into who's making those claims. They love releasing these reports. Quick, let's get another report. We better make them feel like rates are going to go down again. We need them to buy. Our profits aren't high enough.
That's right.
That's what happens every time.
Our profits aren't high enough. Can you imagine that is a conversation in the boardrooms at the banks? Our profits are just not high enough, guys. What are we going to do?
Another report.
Who are we going to fuck?
No, your report last week was a little bit too grim.
Yeah,
Suzanne, you just started here last week. You want to make a name for yourself?
Yeah, you're pretty dumb.
Report.
Yeah, they'll believe whatever you come up with.
Yeah, they haven't used your name before. You haven't been wrong 17 times like Jim was.
Yeah. Does anybody even know these people cited in any of these articles? I mean, for God's sakes, they call us, TK. I mean, they'll just call anybody to write a name to get a quote in some article for some website somewhere.
Listen, I have the best example I can give right now. The fact that I have personally witnessed either an interview or an article or a investment proposal with your name on it, and as being co-host of the Canadian Real Estate Show, as if that gave you credibility.
As if that gave me credibility.
Right away, we know.
I told them to take that off, but
These titles are just, they're just throwing them out there.
Some people actually,
you know what I mean,
made it clear that they didn't invest in the deal because the show turned them off so much. But TK, some people enjoy it.
More room for the winners.
That's right. Well, speaking of winners, we have a great guest for you guys right now. We're going to let him in because he's been waiting longer than even TK.
Hello, can you hear me? Hello, is somebody out there? Anybody hear me? This is Daryl the Dude calling from Norway, live from Norway. It's Friday morning here, and everything is super hunky-dory, you know.
What is going on?
Just a couple of young dudes hanging out, having a little fun, you know. Some having a little bit more fun than the other at the moment.
Ooh-wee.
Please subscribe. And
well, Mark, thanks for joining us again. I don't know how we talked you into coming on the show for a second time, but you're here, and we're gonna hold you up for the next hour.
Daryl pays me a lot of money.
That's right
that makes one of us.
We're siphoning all of these ad revenue funds that we make from the show right to Mark.
You can have your ad revenue share of the show, we promise.
We'll double it.
Yeah.
Brilliant. I love it.
What is happening? How's things over there? I see generally you're good for an update on how bad the market is from an interesting perspective. So how are the bankruptcies or foreclosures or horrible pre-construction assignment deals going?
Well, I'm good for that. I also sing a pretty mean Les Mis, but you never really ask me about my core talent. So I'll instead speak about the real estate market.
Thank you.
Look, guys, things aren't good and they're getting worse. It's the case that, you know, we've been holding our head underwater for a long period of time now. And that period of time is now really kind of making it so that people are sinking. Mm-hmm. You know, real estate, mortgages are kind of the last thing people default on. There's a whole bunch of things that they default on before. Interestingly, the first thing is taxes, because taxes don't get reported on your credit record, and taxes, if your bank isn't paying them, taxes also can just kind of stay there for about 3 years before the city takes any enforcement action, followed by credit cards, followed by car payments, followed by mortgage payments. And what you're seeing is I'm much more interested in the consumer side of debt right now. You're seeing consumer delinquencies in credit cards creeping up. You're seeing tax arrears creeping up. You're seeing the power of sale numbers creeping up, which is the ultimate thing that happens ultimately when things aren't being paid. And we're seeing in our office deal after deal after deal that is becoming more and more difficult to stitch together.
What does that mean?
A lot of people are not money is not, liquidity is at a premium now. Whereas last year, liquidity was everywhere. Less and less people have readily available sources of liquidity. There still exists great pools of liquidity capital out there in the mortgage space and everything else. There is, however, a lack of liquidity amongst Uncle Bob and Aunt May, who you may have borrowed from at one point, or your parents, or your brothers, or your sisters. Asking people to come in with checks is now creating real hardship, both because even if they have their existing HELOCs, those HELOCs are at a rate of 7, 8, 9%, whatever it may be. But also because those HELOCs themselves have been curtailed as the banks are now through Ofsprey looking to secure capital, and they're told that they need to have cushions available for when defaults begin. So what we're seeing is a monetary contraction in the general consuming public. And that means that it's harder to bring in money. It makes it harder to close. People generally are finding that the assignment market is now illiquid. I think it's safe to say near illiquid, meaning that they don't have an out of properties for which they purchased on assignment. And on a whole, you're looking at a distressed market that is showing wear and tear. The high-end market is one where there is an abundance of product, very few takers. The new build construction condo market is one where people are actively sitting away. And this is all really made worse by virtue of the fact that there's no harm in sitting on the sidelines at this point. What's the harm? Just wait. Your prices aren't going to be more next month. They're going to be less. So where's my impetus to actually rush and try to assemble my funds? And so it's having its effect in our office. We are seeing every week we have at least one or two people who are defaulting on new construction, just saying, thank you very much. I would prefer to face the wrath of the builder through courts than the wrath of a lender.
And what are the builders doing? Are they going to court with that?
Yeah, they are in a limited sense.
In case they don't, that might be just started. Yeah.
Well, that's the thing. There was one builder who immediately filed claim against my client. I was very surprised about that because remember, the builder has 2 years to sue, and generally most prudent builders go ahead and they figure out what their true loss is. Right, they sell it. It takes some time. Right, exactly. So a lot of people know, a lot of people kind of get off and then we're just waiting for the lawsuit to come in. But I have been privy to two or three lawsuits at this point where clients who have walked away have faced builder's wrath. Truthfully, the builders don't have much claim if they have gone ahead and resold for something near market and the market is above what the deposit amounts have been. And so most prudent builders are kind of waiting to see where things kind of play out. But no builders are providing mutual releases or the like. In the good times, occasionally you were able to go to a builder and say, come on, like my client's an injured war vet from Vietnam, was chased by a pack of wolves, lost his kid as he went barreled over Niagara Falls, gave a sob story. And then the builder said, yeah, we get it. All right, we'll sign a mutual release. And the reason they did that
is because they'll sell it for more.
Right, exactly.
Keep the deposit.
Yeah.
But even so, some builders wouldn't do that.
Take your deposit back. I'll resell it for another $150 a foot. Go yourself. Thank you. Have a nice day. In the good times.
They didn't need to sign those mutual releases. They just did. But now, in a falling market, I haven't seen a single one sign a mutual release. It's bad. It's bad. And above all else, people are really hurting. This is not a fun game anymore. People who are closing are dreading the close. They are pulling out all stops in order to do this. No properties are cash flowing as was expected. And there's no way out. And made worse by government policy that has instituted the anti-flipping policy. That would have been a really good policy, perhaps, during the past 10 years.
2 years, right? 10 years ago, maybe, right?
Exactly. But the government typical fashion, they shut down the assignment market. They shut down demand from foreign buyers.
And they bring us open bidding now that nobody's buying anything. So it'll be transparent. Yeah.
Mark, how are people closing the deals? What are they doing? What kind of hoops are they jumping through to actually close some of these with the appraisals being short and the deposits being light and the people not wanting to buy them anymore? What are they doing?
Let's remember for one thing, we're just talking in an aggregate sense, right? The builders, the properties that are not appraising, the huge misappraisals took place in the freehold market largely because the worst appraised properties were in Paris, Ontario, where people were paying $1 million for a property that was valued at $600,000 about 3-4 years ago. The condo market experienced the meteoric rise, but not the same as like the peripheral freehold markets of Caledon and Paris and God knows what. The huge misappraisals took place in the freehold and stacked townhome kind of products in these areas that frankly no one ever really wanted to live in, and then kind of people moved into. And because the construction timeline of that is really a year or a year and a half, we're kind of coming to the end of the freehold shit show, if you will. I don't know if I'm allowed to swear on the show, but I'm wearing a mustache, so I figure I get some leeway.
Don't fucking swear.
Right, exactly. So I mean, at the end of the day, the huge appraisal difference took place in the freehold, and that's coming to an end. Now, there still is appraisal.
That's coming to an end? Why? Why is it coming to an end? That whole cycle.
Two-year timelines, Max.
I'm not saying
the peak of the markets.
Entirely. I'm saying to you, in the freehold space where the appraisals were the greatest, it's coming to an end.
So where now, people were picketing, is it those sites where everybody was going bananas and picketing?
It was those ones. Those ones were really bad. Now,
what happened with those ones? Did you have clients in those situations? Like, what did they do?
Well, In one case, I think a builder agreed if you put, actually it was a very smart move by one builder. One builder said, if everyone agrees to pump in $100,000 more right now as a deposit, we'll lower your price by $50,000, which I actually thought was very astute. Like grab more
I
security.
I remember hearing that, yeah.
Do this. And the reason smart they did that the was because they
the bank.
Had, the reason they did this is because they, yeah.
Yeah, the
well,
loan.
The reason they did this is because they still had still have product to sell. And so they knew that if they were going to continue to resell the product, everyone would misappraise anyways. And there would they'd just be dealing with people who were defaulting. So it was actually a very smart strategy mm-hmm. in that regard.
Just firms them up more.
It does.
And they weren't expecting probably $300,000 of that sale price because when they had first bought the land, they were projecting it back in 2016. So when they sold it in 2021, 2022, it's like we're getting how much for them now? Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. But that's what great. We talked about is when all that shit was happening, we were like, these guys have to know that what they're doing. Like the builders knew that the performa, you know, said this. And now it's like, holy shit. Like, how is this going to work out well? Some of them had to have been sitting there going, this is not going to be good. Like, I don't know.
Let's see if they pay it. Let's see if they pay it.
TK asked an interesting question, right? He said, like, okay, so what happens in your office? And the answer is one of the interesting factors over the past 5 years has been that in addition to you signing your agreement, you've been signing with your parents. And because everyone is in the pot, everyone has been in the lobster pot while it's been boiling. Yeah. Everyone is coming up with monies. And the thing about parents is it's almost a forced intergenerational transfer of wealth in order to keep your kid afloat. Because not because you even like your kid, after all, your kid is the one that got you into this problem, but yeah. just because your name is on the agreement as well. Like, what else are you going to do? You got to kind of come up with it. So what we have is we have people who are coming up with money partially because so many co-signers are there, and therefore you've roped many people into the problem. You have a lot of people who are coming up with funds, beg, borrowing, and stealing because people still have some gas in the engine from previous refinances that were taking place before 2021. That's kind of quickly depleting.
But hold on a sec. All those guarantors were to help get to the finish line with the stress test. But we're like light years past the stress test numbers now. So all those people that had like four guarantors just to get to the 5.25 or whatever, now they have to qualify at like who knows what, right? 8 or something like that? No? They need like 8 more guarantors. Are lenders still allowing that game to happen even?
Sure.
Hey, load sure, it up.
That game is kosher. That game kosher. Is actually kosher. It's like, okay, that's fine. These people are the people who are on the agreements. That's actually a kosher game. There's a million games that are not kosher. That one there is kosher. The one that I think is getting people into like the most trouble. You don't see it all that. You don't see it. It's not something that is such a frequent occurrence that I think it's a systemic problem, but it happens with regularity. Is the person who went ahead and purchased 2, 3, 4 pre-constructions because they had gone ahead and purchased successfully a pre-construction in 2012. They sold it in 2016.
Geniuses, we call them.
Right. And they bought it in 2016 and then they sold it in 2019. And by that point, they knew how to work the system. And one of the things that they could work was the idea that, okay, they're sitting on this cash. Now let's buy based on a pre-approval, which comes from a bank. But that bank pre-approval was used over and over and over again to over 2 or 3 different projects because they hadn't
different
closed
banks.
On those projects. And the contractual commitment didn't form part of the TDS or GDS ratios that the bank was using in order to assess. Mm-hmm. So people actually took this appraisal and went over it and did 2 or 3 separate appraisals. You used this appraisal over 2 or 3 separate projects and are in a world of hurt and cannot close.
So and a lot of the real estate agents. Though? A lot of them are realtors.
First
of all,
sure.
There's a law. There's a law and there's rules in these agreements that says you won't do this. So the fact that people are doing this.
But how do they got to check it? No, the builder has to like.
That's great, TK. I just drove on the highway. There's a big sign that says 100. Yeah. But I mean, good luck to you.
Right. I know, but you know
find
what I mean? Like,
someone
so
driving
who's 100. Responsible for this? I don't feel bad for the people. I know it's tough love here, but I had a guy the other day. He's like, I got 6 of them and his payment was like $30,000 a month. And he's closing on them all privately.
Feel badly for people in just a bit of a sense. Like, I get it. People are going to get their reckoning. I'm not trying to tell you government should be intervening here or anything else. No, you're going to fail. You're going to fail. But what's really sad, and this is, I love Canada dearly. I'm a big fan of Canada and everything else, but I'm going to bash the Canadian economy for a second. Canada doesn't have an economy. We do not have monies for businesses, for innovation, for anything really. All we have is real estate. And if you are someone who's peddlingly middle class, getting $60,000 a year, and you want to get rich, there is no better thing to do than to invest in real estate, because the Canadian economy is designed around it, because the banks will only lend you money for your secured assets, because you can't borrow at government rates for anything else on this planet. And so it's all well and good that we're sitting there going, tut, 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 tut. But you know what? Every one of us at one point in life is aggressive and actually sits there and says, I'm going to make something for myself and I'm going to take some risks. These people took the risk. They're going to face the consequence. It doesn't mean you can't kind of feel for them, given that we're set up in a system that just doesn't care. You can go ahead. You can have the best idea in the world. Good luck to you trying to get any money for it. Good luck to you getting any government support for it. The government will applaud you once you're successful to Shopify, but we only produce one Shopify to every 10 that the Americans do. And that's not a factor of our size. I'm talking about relative to our size. It's just, we do not foster innovation. We do not foster business, and we do not care to actually have anyone invest in anything other than real estate. And so can you really complain when you have a young buckshot who's 20 years old who's saying, screw it, I'm going to take my risk and the only thing that I actually can make money in? I don't know that I blame them. They face the consequence for sure. No government bailouts. Fuck you. But
you can do a tech startup. It just has to be prop tech. It can't be anything else, right? You better have some sort of real estate technology in it, and then you stand a chance as well too. But you're right.
But
this is the economy we're in.
Well, but I mean, we do have things that are pretty valuable in this country, you know, to the rest of the world, and I think internally. Oil, we could probably be doing a little bit better with the oil trade. Maybe we should start some refineries in this country and maybe, you know, not ship all of our oil out to get refined and bring it back five times the price that it left. That might be a good idea. But I mean, even just decoupling, you know, wheat from all the regulations and the bullshit and let us sell it out there on the world stage. Like we produce so much. We have so many natural reasons. I keep saying, like, this place should be rocking like Dubai. And instead we're more like, I mean, I think even Nigeria is rocking more than Canada right now. And I'm not even being facetious. Like,
we are in a mess right now. We really are. Like, there's no question. We are in a real mess where people's debts and people's futures are no longer bright. You know, I teach down at various places, and I see a bunch of 20-year-olds. And these 20-year-olds, you know, I remember when I was 20, I had the gleam in my eye. I'm like, Jesus Christ, the world's my oyster. I can go out and I can just do whatever I want. I can get X, Y, Z. I can go where I want. 20-year-olds now, they graduate from school having taken on $30,000 in debt per year. Then they're expected to go ahead and purchase a property for $1.5 million, all before the expense of raising kids, which I mean, God knows. And then we sit there and say,
and they want to eat too. Don't forget that. Right. They like
eating. And then the American dream is alive and well. No, it's not. No, it's not. They have nothing left. And anything that they do have, they have to pull their parents in for. So the real question is this the same Canada, is this the same land of opportunity that we ourselves, I mean, I'm approaching 50, that I experienced when I was going through school? It is not. It is not fair. It's not just. And we are not doing what is collectively necessary to set up our future for our kids within this country. And that is a direct result of housing costs, by the way.
One of the things, Mark, that you started with the you said the increase in consumer debt and increase in mortgage insolvencies and stuff like that too. It seems like it still really hasn't gotten to the point yet of crisis. I feel like everything's edging up. Like, okay, I see the numbers. most of them aren't even where we were pre-COVID yet. And then, you know, like, what does it have to get to? Like, to me, I hear everything you're saying. And believe me, there's a ton of things where I'm just like, man, Mark, we are in so much more trouble and we're just getting started. But I also feel like the percentage of people who are in real trouble is much lower than A, there should be, or B, than we think there is. Am I wrong? Well,
they're being saved by all this demand, right? Like the market's not tanking as much as it could and should, because there's all these people coming in, and some of them do have money. Enough of them have money to buy into the supply. And like, I mean, like you always say, somebody has to buy something. People have to move all the time, right? So like, and then add to it, you know, amortization's going to 150 years on some loans, negative amortizations and tweaking of all these rules. They've really not allowed it to drop to a point where it could have, right? And that's a problem. Right. As much as I hate to say it, but like, this is far from a free economy. Right. And so like you're saying, Mark, it's unfair. Like it is so stacked against people that are trying to start now. But what's happening is like that K-shaped thing is happening again, where like TK, you're saying it doesn't feel like much is really, you know, falling by the wayside yet. But as people are falling off, there's so many people that are piling in that make up for them. Right.
But now, I don't think it's just the economic. I think that there's, yes, overall the economy is doing okay because of immigration. But I think a lot of these people, there's a ton of people taking losses. Don't get me wrong. But if your net income doubled from 2019 to 2022 and then you lost 33% of it, you're still up. You're doing okay. And so there's these massive losses. I'm witnessing them. My clients are having, you know, huge issues with some of the deals that they've done. But then you talk to them about some of the things that they've been doing over the last few years. People made a lot of money. Mm-hmm. And so they're okay, you know, like they're going to be, you know, they're kind of just like, I'm going to take my knocks here. No, but at the end of the day,
the reason that they made a lot of money. No. Hold on. The reason that they made a lot of money, the reason people were investing in pictures of apes smoking cigars,
yeah,
was because the government went ahead and increased the money supply by 25%. That's the reason they were doing okay. They were doing okay because there was so much money sloshing around the system that even the top 1% that was siphoning off as much as they could drink, they were still water falling out and sprinkling on the rest of us. That is what was going on for 100%. The past 3 years.
And people saved up too then, right? They saved up and now they're saving.
Yeah,
and
I don't think they made wise decisions.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. But that was a temporary steroid, and monetary contraction is now here. And by the way, the big boys have lapped up that money very effectively. As a result, what you have is you have the people who had net incomes see what was effectively a steroid boost, but the steroid's no longer coursing through their system. The muscles are atrophying very, very quickly. What's more, they have probably set themselves into some short to medium to maybe even long-term commitments based on the idea that, hey, this is not based on monetary largesse, but rather my own competence that has allowed me to be brilliant at buying Gorilla 8 pictures. And as a result, I'm going to go buy 4 condos. And so now what you have is you have a
real estate agents.
XRP!
It's the worst of all worlds for a lot of people.
Yeah. Okay. And so I see what you're saying, and you're right. The amount of money that people may have made, maybe they just haven't lost it all yet. And that most of them, the net income exponential growth that's gone already. Believe me, that's all gone. Right. We know that. And now they've got these things to service as far as debt.
Well, and people were working multiple jobs from home. People were working maybe three jobs from home,
full-time jobs,
right? Having a YouTube channel and God knows what kind of streams.
Which wasn't a problem because it was making money when there was money splashing around. But it's very easy to go find your own pond if it's raining cats and dogs for 3 years, right? Yeah. Like it's not a problem. Oh, I have my own little thing. I found my great little niche and I'm going to make more money because it's going to keep on raining. No, it's not. And it stopped. And it stopped and it has contracted in the most real of manners. And as a result, you're seeing, if you wonder why it is that people are going back into the workforce, if you wonder why it is that the commercial office space is now seeing people return on the Mondays and the Fridays, it's not by corporate policy. I mean, corporate policy has wanted that for a long time. It's not that at all. It's that people are now saying, oh, there are real jobs out there that I need to do in order to afford my mortgage, which real jobs I never really treated as seriously in the past 3 years in the era of unlimited money.
Yeah.
We are in a different world.
People got lazier. People got lazier. Everyone's expectations on income. Yeah. Yeah, they could stay home, that they could, you know, make money fast. And so this will take a while. And so even though the unemployment rate's been ridiculously low for a long time, one of our guests on the show, he often comments on how that affects our economy and how we need to get back to 6%+ unemployment just to be able to regulate everybody's ideas and philosophies around work. Because it's not a healthy work environment. You need to feel like, I need to work hard. I need to swing a hammer. I need to show up at the office. I need to put in extra hours. I need to do that. That's healthy for our economy. That's for sustainability as Canada as a whole.
Becoming the point, after COVID and after the monetary expansion, it was coming to a point where people who were actually doing day jobs were being seen as suckers, because the discrepancy between what they were bringing home versus what some YouTube influencer who was doing some silly dance was bringing home was just not comparable. And you were like, what am I doing with my life? And that reversal has now taken place because money is not freely sloshing through the system. You know, it's funny because we all kind of analyze these things and we're all like, well, individuals make decisions. No, they don't. We make decisions in aggregate. We make decisions predicated. If you and I were both born in sub-Saharan Africa, we wouldn't be sitting here talking about real estate of sub-Saharan Africa. It's just you're a product of the environment you live in. I'm a product of a successful law firm because I grew up in an environment that fostered law and saw value in it and put money into lawyers' wallets early on, which may not be the case of lawyers growing up today. It's a different environment. The environment we had over the past 3 years prior to 2021 was fictitious, was artificial, and was inflated. And we are back to the real in a very, very real sense.
Thankfully. And
And now, like, the fallback in Canada, which was always like, you know, fuck, if I lose my job, I guess I'll go swing a hammer or I'll paint somebody's house, right? I'll go do some yard work. It's gone. Those opportunities are gone. And then all these people that became like copywriters or bookkeepers, like gig kind of stuff on the side, those guys just got wiped out by ChatGPT-4, right?
Totally. Well, actually, that's really true of almost all professions, right? Everyone is getting wiped out across the board, in the professional sense, and it's difficult. There's a lot of culminating events that are leading us to believe that we're going to see seismic change in how people work, but I don't think that seismic change is going to result in people sitting at home snacking on popcorn and making YouTube videos. I think it's going to be a much more traditional sense of work that we were very accustomed to prior to COVID than what most people expect. Having said that, you know, the using the tools along the lines of traditional work and in conjunction with traditional work will have remarkable effects on efficiencies. I'm very excited to see what AI heralds for our productivity as a country, as a global society, really. It's going to be remarkable.
I heard that the most affected industry was the digital movie industry. Like DreamWorks was saying they'll be able to cut down on 90% of the time to make one of their films. That used to take like 10 years sometimes because of AI.
I'm friends with one of the guys who's in NVIDIA in Canada. And, you know, like video game designers had to, like, I don't know if you guys, I like video games. So like, I love Skyrim, like as an example. Skyrim is a great video game. And it's a virtual world that's huge, just huge. And you can run around and every single mountain has been placed and every single boulder has been placed and whatever it is.
Yeah.
Now you just have artificial intelligence create universes, just wherever the place goes, they're generating a universe in the game right then and there.
Interactive.
There's fascinating applications to AI. Like, I'll give you an example that he gave me, which is just, I know this isn't real estate, but it's fascinating. So do you know the way that self-driving cars work? Self-driving cars work by basically taking a whole range of data. You drive them a million kilometers all over the roads. You collect the data. You do an analysis of the data. Boom, they've now learned how to turn right and left and everything else. Traditional AI. Well, wouldn't it be interesting? because if you can drive for 1,000,000 kilometers, you may not see, or you may see one instance of a ball running in front of a car and a kid chasing it, right? Maybe one. That's not sufficient data to build a knowledge within the car to stop when they see a ball, right? As an example. So wouldn't it be fascinating if you could get more than 1,000,000 reams of data? Wouldn't it be fascinating if you can get 100,000,000 immediately for every instance? What if you could generate data? And what if the car itself could generate data and then run its regression analysis on the data it itself generates within a second, such that if a new event happens, like a ball in front of the car, it can generate the progressive sequence of what will happen. And by analyzing that 1,000,000 times over, can ultimately determine that it needs to stop. Well, you almost have basic.
Isn't that happening now?
Yeah, it is. It's fascinating what AI heralds. It's an amazing development. It's not my area, but boy, am I interested to see where that goes.
And these are things that we know of that, you know, we've heard of, but imagine the stuff that, you know, we're how far down the chain are we, you know, like there's some stuff out there that must be just absolutely like mind-boggling what it can do.
Imagine just the whole internet, mobile phones, smartphones, all that kind of stuff. Imagine all the jobs that those took out, right? And the guys at the time when it was creating, they were just like, geez, you know what? The yellow pages and, you know, my call service and fax machines, whatever it was that were being replaced. How many more opportunities came from it? We're so small-minded. When everyone's like, oh, AI, my job. Oh, no, it's going to create so much more opportunity for people. It's going to create so many things we can't even imagine yet. The world that we're going to enter when AI is an option. Like you can be almost in any role because of the creativity that AI, you'll be like, you know what, today I'm going to be a web developer. I'm going to design myself a website. Here I go. And you'll have those abilities, right? Because of it. And that will be creating jobs.
Whatever happens, there's always OnlyFans. So like I satisfy myself in the knowledge that don't worry about it. There's always a fallback. We're good.
There's always OnlyFans.
Listen, I've tried, all right? It's not as easy as it seems.
It's not that easy. You should try with the mustache. <You know? laughs> But hold on a sec. I think you might be missing one piece of the puzzle that I think is going to be very important, because I think a lot of industries and a lot of different jobs will all be lost in a very, very, very short amount of time. And maybe this will at some point, you know, there'll be more jobs or new jobs spawned from it. But I think the rate that the jobs will disappear will probably increase because the AI will think of new ways to eliminate the mistakes of the humans just as part of the process. So as it's just doing its thing, it'll just become more and more efficient and need less and less of us fucking up the process.
We can ask AI how to have more jobs for the human body to be able to do every single day. Like it's endless. It's exponential.
Yeah. Go sit in that pod over there and just plug yourself.
It'll
in.
Say, look, everything this will industry be fine. Will never be replaced by us. We need more humans here and it'll guide people. I'm telling you, I believe AI creates more jobs. It eliminates 42% of the jobs we have right now, but it'll create jobs that we don't even know about yet.
Imagine everybody on the road or every car or every vehicle on the road was run by AI and traffic was just moving so beautifully and nobody got in accidents anymore. Just think about how many jobs disappear from that.
Are you a real estate agent and you're looking to make a change? Anywhere in Ontario, guess what? We're hiring. Franklin and Associates, number one team in the GTA for all RE/MAX teams, number one team for all teams from all companies for number of units sold. Throughout Toronto. So if you're looking to make a change, best decision I ever made was to join Franklin Associates. Go to jointeamleo.com and we can set up a call.
But think about the fact that you now have 2 hours free a day to actually pursue other things.
Like suddenly, what? What are you going to do? How much porn?
We don't know yet. It doesn't exist yet.
you know, Daryl, you're speaking, but the cotton gin was invented and there's voluminous issues. I'm going to agree with TK here. There's voluminous writings on the fact that the cotton gin was going to replace just displaced tons of people. When the Industrial Revolution came about, what do you think Dickens was writing about? I mean, I understand AI and Dickens are very different times, and that the rapid increase in AI does not compare, but the concept is the same. It's absolutely the same. You are dealing with people who are being displaced by ever increasing and faster change. So far, we've dealt with it. I don't know that we have any reason to suspect that we won't continue to deal with it, particularly as people remain hungry and need have mortgages to pay. They'll figure out their place. Having said that, who knows? Certainly, there is one thing that is buttresses your point, which is this. Since 1979, middle-class incomes in North America have been stagnant and declining. In other words, on balance, for the first time since the Industrial Revolution, really, well, not since the Industrial Revolution, but since World War II, we have actually experienced declining growth. So maybe there is something to it. We'll see.
You
we'll
can be boomers
with mustache mouth next year.
But you can experience
vacating their job positions, right?
Yeah.
There's other factors. There's so many factors, right? When you start looking at jobs and security and, you know, what our role is going to be, the jobs that exist today didn't exist 50 years ago in most cases. And in 50 years from now, it's going to be a whole different environment that nobody 50 years ago could have predicted.
Real estate lawyer, which has been doing the exact same thing for over 150 years.
Honestly, underpaid, God, those guys. They deserve way more credit than they get.
I realized the other day that if someone from 150 years ago came into my office, short of the glowy little computer screen that I look at, they would totally be able to understand exactly what it is I do. How pathetic is that?
No, Nothing has changed. It really means that it's useful. That's what it means. If it still exists today, it means it must be a real service. You know, it's like cutting hair. You know, it's like, geez, it's very valuable. It's
lawyers are different, though. They've kind of set their little box up differently. I mean, they have the ability to create different moats than most people around themselves, right? It's a very different.
We're fundamentally what we are, honest to God. What
create
we are.
Create work. You're like same. Government no, workers.
No, we're the same thing that all professions are, which is just a monopoly. I love how all the professions are conservative. I love it. I love when someone turns to me and says, I am proudly libertarian. I believe that government should be out. And then they're a profession which, by definition, succeeds because there's a piece of legislation that says, no one else shall be allowed to practice in this space except you guys.
Yeah.
Literally, that's the reason real estate agents make money. That is the reason lawyers make money. That's the reason engineers make money. That's the reason architects make money. Because truthfully, title insurance can do what I do as a real estate lawyer, and engineers can be done by AI. But the reason that we all make money is because there's a little piece of legislation that says no one else can do this. Yeah. And so every person who's sitting there saying, I'm very libertarian, and what are you talking about? You rely on government largesse for your very incomes. It is astounding the lack of knowledge that professionals have about how coddled they are, and the reason that they're being given this particular right is totally by virtue of government largesse.
Have you been following the case in the States and the other class action one in Canada?
Oh, yeah.
About the commissions for real estate agents. What's your thoughts on that?
You know, it's interesting because I don't feel I'm primed to talk about this. I'll tell you why. Not because I don't understand the law. I don't think I'm primed to talk about this because about 15 years ago, I said real estate agents will be the first to follow the professions. And it turns out I was dead wrong about it. Actually, I think real estate agents are going to be the only profession that exists once everything is said and done.
In Canada. Careful.
The people in the comments are going to eat you up for that one.
No. I actually really believe it.
Because they're like cockroaches. They're going to live through everything.
I actually think that it's such a large decision for people that they want someone. The value of a real estate agent is you are there to hold someone's hand, and people will pay for it because they're so uncertain and it's such a large price. Everyone else gets nailed to the bone. Real estate agents have been able to maintain their percentages. I actually believe that the reason that's there is not because legislation has mandated. Legislation hasn't mandated commissions for a while. I believe it's because people actually ascribe a value to real estate agents that they don't to other professionals. I know that's insulting because, quite frankly, I've gone to school for 9 years plus. I've had to, my insurance is three times the price, and I make half of what a real estate agent does
I wrote three exams and it was all open book.
Right. Like, you know? Like I totally understand why that's insulting to people. But it doesn't make it any less true. I actually just think that people value real estate agents more than they do other professionals.
That's an interesting thought. I haven't heard that before. Yeah. No, I mean he's right.
Because they deal with them
dictates.
Once.
I've never heard it articulated like that. But the market does dictate it, which means that there's somebody out there who values the services that they're being provided at a rate that seems to be very consistent amongst both Canadian and American consumers.
It's the best marketing. It's the second best marketing ploy behind bank mortgages of all time. And the only thing really was the data, was keeping that data locked up nice and tight that nobody else could use for so long. And now the combination of that being unlocked and all of these tools that are going to start coming out soon, now you can go to ChatGPT and like program it to do something specific in real estate on your own by like typing in three lines.
Yeah, but Daryl, you know, when they broke open MLS and said anyone is allowed to list now just using a brokerage, but not pay and have a non-service brokerage, like a FSBO brokerage, you know, that was seen by people as the thing that would herald the decline of commissions. I was part of those discussions. I was teaching down at the OREA at the time. I remember people panicking, but it turns out people were very happy paying the 5%. People had no problem paying the 5%. Possibly because the values were going up, but now they're going down. People are still paying the 5%.
It's like, timing.
It's not changing. And so I'm not sure that regulatory or lawsuits initiatives are going to change this dynamic that I am, over the course of my career, tending to believe are actually the value people are ascribing to the service. I have no idea why. I don't get it. I know
we agree on that. That it's too high.
I know how hard I have to work. For $75,000. It's astounding to me that people say, oh, this is what it should be valued at. But I don't think that there's any discussion as to whether or not people are actually valuing it at that. They are.
Can you imagine if your fees you were just able to double them and everybody just paid them? Like, this is what's happened in the last 4 years in Ontario, right? Like, commissions just doubled by, like, just natural causes, through the wind blew them, right?
One thing I find, you want me to get some hate in your comments?
Yes.
Let's get some hate going in your comments.
Nobody's listening anymore. It's okay.
One thing I absolutely really, really actually take issue with are real estate agents that try to convince me that what they're doing is worth the time they're putting in. Now, that's not to say that many agents are not worth their time. They are. But there was this thing circulated.
Don't you know we do this too?
The post he's talking about. Let's talk about the post.
A list of 100 things that they do. I don't know. You probably saw it on your emails every 5 seconds on Facebook. This is what a realtor does. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6.
I made the butter tarts.
Right. Now, here's the thing. They do a lot. But you want to compare that to someone who's making $20,000 or $60,000 a year? If they had to detail everything that they did, their list would be equally long, but you're making $75,000 on a deal. And what I find difficult about this is that there is a lack of understanding of exactly how hard it is for the average Canadian to make these same incomes. Again, I'm not saying to you that real estate agents aren't worth it. In fact, I've been talking this whole time about the fact that people are valuing this service at that amount. But at the same time, because real estate agents are getting paid what they are, there is, I think, a misunderstanding of exactly how little Canadians actually make and how much $75,000 is to the average person. It is an exceptional amount of money that people are making on these deals, and it may very well be
worth it. Even $10,000 is a lot of money for someone to make for some of the work they have to do. So you know, whatever. They wrote up an offer to their cousin who went to the open house on the weekend and they got paid 10 grand for it.
You build construction.
It's like, what other world does that exist in?
Construction is astounding. Like, don't get me wrong. I understand there's huge skill sets in aggregating massive amounts of new build construction, getting lead generation and actually far, like, I get it. But like, someone stands outside a sales center. I once stood outside a sales center as a broker. I'm a broker. When I was in the days of broker, I remember standing outside a sales center. And I remember just speaking to four people who were walking in, and I suddenly repped four people on a project. By standing outside the sales center, I made close to $150,000 in a day. Now, sure, I needed to know what to say. Sure, I needed to know how to pitch. Sure, I needed to actually, but I need to do all that as a lawyer too. But as a lawyer, I don't make $150,000 in a day. And it's the agents have proven that they're worth their money because people are ready to pay it. I just wish agents had a reciprocal understanding. More agents had a reciprocal, many, many agents do. Agents had a reciprocal understanding of exactly how much money what they are earning is relative to what other people earn in other jobs for similar work. It is a good profession to be in.
We should do it more like
unless you're a business owner, there is no other job that can pay you per hour the same amount as a real estate agent makes. I can't name one. Unless you're the owner of the business.
Like $1 an hour at the end of the year.
Okay. But do you know what I mean? A very successful business owner when you look at it, you know, but all the other jobs, I mean, you know, even if you look at the very high level, high skilled professionals, right? So I agree. And I think the only way to do this, and this is my thoughts, I've shared it before, Mark, and I want to hear your thoughts on it, is if we had less real estate agents. The problem is when you only make one sale a year, you need to make 25 grand on that sale. You need to make 50 grand a year, and then you spend it all. And then you say, but I had to pay for this and I had to pay for that. I went to this course, but you only made one sale. How useful were you that to that client? If there was a minimum standard for amount of sales, a maximum amount of agents involved, there'd be less agents to share the same amount of business, which would then say, hey, we can afford to charge less. We're all going to do the same amount of work, have the same amount of income.
That's not the reason that they're charging it. They're charging it because people are ready to pay it.
Because they can. I know.
I really believe agents are charging it because they're ready to pay it. If there's one person who has all these expenses and everything else, that's not the reason for the pricing. It isn't. Moreover, I want less government regulation. I frankly am sick of government regulation across the professions. Across,
you don't like my idea. You don't think it's going to work?
Free market, guys. Let's do this without regulation. Like, succeed.
Yeah.
Succeed on the basis of your own gumption and success. Don't give me
that's
a government
in,
regulation that's timing competition.
No.
Just do it.
Yeah.
Do it. Win.
It should be like at a restaurant, after the sale is done, you should hand us a thing and we should give you a tip depending on how good a job you did. There should be like this minimum amount for selling the house. And then it should be like, what percentage would you like to add on top of this today? Right. Instead, we have to pay a tip at Shoppers Drug Mart to a computer that you do a self-checkout. You got to leave a little tip, or somebody at the baseball game that reached over, grabbed a bottle of water and gave it to you. You got to sit there and go, shit, do I tip this person 18% or should I be a dick and not do it? That's crazy. But with everyone a realtor, it's like, here's 100 grand, bro. Thanks for listing my house.
Send it. You don't have a choice.
Because I'm not trying to come down hard on realtors. Like, again,
I know.
If realtors were not worth this, they would not be able to command it. It's a market thing. They have proven it in the market that they can command this. It's just, there's an astounding, it's amazing when you actually deal with Canadians on a daily basis, and I deal with a lot of them on a daily basis, how little money people have, how hard they have to work for that money, and what people consider windfalls. A windfall of $5,000 is life changing for certain people.
Oh yeah,
life changing. Mm-hmm. Like, it's just not. It's a different headspace than where realtors who are performing are in, and to some degree, I wonder to what degree that disjointed sort of reality between the people who are servicing the clientele that need it, I wonder to what degree that does not allow for effective communication as between the two.
What's our solution then? How do we get to that point? Because I'm agreeing with the point, which is the commissions are too high, that the service being provided, the consumers do agree that that's what it's worth. But at the end of the day, if it was less, then realtors would provide the same service and the consumers would be just as happy. How do we get there?
I don't think it's for us to look, guys. You're going to find me to be the first liberal person that you meet, because I'm pretty proudly liberal, although not right now, but pretty usually proudly
good
liberal. But you'll find me that I'm the first liberal that's actually fiercely libertarian. Like, I truly, truly, truly hate government regulation where it's not necessary. That's not to say regulation is not sometimes necessary. It is. But where I see needless regulation...
The law?
No, the law is regulation. That's what it is. And half the time it is needless regulation. But at the end of the day, If you're asking how we get there, well, if the market is already substantiating it, then perhaps there's no need. Perhaps that is just the value of a real estate agent that we're ready to pay. And it's an acceptable outcome. If fundamentally we've challenged it by allowing FSBOs, if we've opened up the historical data, if we have allowed anyone to charge anything and to negotiate with their agents, and if fundamentally we're all just making the understanding that, okay, I'm going to negotiate and get 4.5% instead of 5%, and we've accepted that that's the reality, well, then maybe we don't need to do anything. Maybe that's just what Canadians are valuing the service at, and it's not on us to actually change it. Like, I don't know why we need to change something if fundamentally Canadians are saying this is still a value to me.
It's similar to house prices. You know, even though we all disagree that I don't want to pay more, or that I don't think people should have to pay this much of their monthly income towards housing, but at the end of the day, house prices might just be more expensive in Canada than everywhere else, and that it may not be as broken of a system as everybody thinks it is. Or at least we can try, and we can all try to rationalize it, and we can try to, you know, coach people. But if Canadians deem the value of their dollar that they work hard for, and 35 to 40% of it every single month needs to be going to where they live, they'll continue to put that percentage towards housing, no matter what we tell them.
To some degree, it's not on us to fix a problem that Canadians are saying this is what we're valuing things at. And because fixing it means additional regulations and burdens. And suddenly you have to sit there and say, no, we're restricting you from doing this, and we're restricting you from this. Screw it. Okay, you want to pay 5%? Pay 5%. Done. Finished. Here we go. You know, and that to me isn't the worst thing. But really, we're getting back to what we were talking about at the beginning. Where we are is in a very different state than where we were but a year or two ago. And it is predicated upon expectations that were set and not met, government largesse, and a flooding of dollars into the economy that fundamentally has destroyed the stability of measured growth. And we are, real estate agents are a tangential beneficiaries of that largesse, because the money flew directly into their chosen line of profession. And because that then increased the prices, and because contingent commissions were contingent upon those prices, they benefited probably disproportionately to others from the monetary inflow that took place from the government.
There wasn't enough time to make an adjustment. Like, prices just went so crazy so quickly that no one even had time to think, like, hang on a sec, the realtors aren't doing anything different and they're making twice the money. We should stop this. But I get that you said
money on the sale, and so they were willing to pay, I think.
Well, that's part of it. But it's like, right? I get what Mark's saying, but I think it's more like it's built into the system so deeply that people don't even think about it, and don't even think, like, I don't think anybody knows that it's, you don't have to pay a commission on a house. People just, like, this is how it goes. Most people buy one house in their lifetime, maybe two, right? And, like, that's it. They trust the guy did a good job. They don't even know, right?
There are lots of things that are built into the system that fail over time when they don't provide value. Mortgage brokers are a prime example of that. They have managed to find a failed system in the banking sector for the purposes of sourcing mortgages. Banks failed Canadians for long enough, even though banks are the most trusted institution in Canada, for long enough that ultimately they found a niche and crawled their way in. There are any number of other examples in real estate where people have said, no, this creeping ridiculousness is not something I'm abiding by. I'm going to find out other avenues. They have not done that with realtors.
Yeah. And here's my realtor little plug here, is because the people who they do know, like, and trust are saying, hey, this is my fee, and this is why I'm worth it. And so, you know, people are going to continue to pay that, as long as those relationships are still there. And at the end of the day, 9 times out of 10, the person who's charging the fee that might be standard in whatever area you're living in is the best person for the job, because they actually know what they're doing, and they're there trying to help you, right? And they actually want what's best for you.
Maybe they want what's best, but the chance that they're the best one for you in that market is slim to none.
No, I wouldn't. I would totally disagree with that. I think it's a service industry. It's a service industry. It's about somebody who's going to look out for you and take care of you and want to help you and make sure you make the right decisions. And somebody who's just going around, let's say, as a discount agent, again, super realty here right now, but they're just saying, you're a number. Okay, yeah, I'll take my X percent or flat fee and just, okay, get it done, get it done, get it done. And they put that type of transactional approach into it. And that's what becomes bad for the client. And there could be way more than the perceived savings on fee that's lost in the transaction. And that's, again, all just things that will get ironed out over time. So,
yep.
I think it is magnified by the divide in the society right now between the haves and the have-nots. And as people kind of watch, you know, the shows, these million-dollar listings, and people see like these crazy numbers that some realtors make while, you know, drinking champagne and driving in the back seat of a limo in New York, you know. And they see, I mean, a lot of realtors are living the life, whether or not they have the money to do so is another story. But people think, and like Mark says, I mean, the whole country's built around real estate. It's like they're rock stars. It's right. It's like they're the cool guys. They're making all the dough. But out of 80,000 of them here in Ontario, what is the chances that somebody gets the right one for them that's the best in the area?
Well, they don't really
have the numbers on that.
That's a big zero, bro.
Better than they have the better than
right. All they need to be is able to do it functionally and well, right? Like they don't need to be the best,
right? Yeah, and that's it. If you're doing it once or twice in your lifetime, they just have to like get the job done, and that's the end of it. Move on.
Agreed.
Well, TK,
thanks, guys,
we bashed the shit out of realtors today, and we got nowhere. Mark,
we had. Mustaches to prove it.
The reason that I bash the shit out of realtors is because I'm hoping like hell you don't turn the hammer on lawyers. So
that's right,
I feel
deflecting
that
it.
Always better to just point at other people.
Those are beautiful.
You work with a lot of realtors. You know the ins and outs. You've seen the good and the bad. You know that there's
listen, I have a lot of what I really like about realtors is the hustle. I love realtors as a profession have hustle, and I admire hustle. Like, these guys are hungry. They look at you with the gleam in their eyes. They all know sales, and sales is the most important thing that you can know. And they are hungry. And I really respect the realtor corps. I really like the realtor corps because I see in them people who just kind of sit there and go, I'm going to make my own way. I'm going to fight everyone. I don't care if there's 72,000 others of you. I'm awesome. And then they go to make it on their own. There's something about a realtor at its core that I really just admire. And so it's a really fun industry to be in.
Imagine if we all thought we were number one in our lives. If we all just walked around and were like, I'm the best husband, I'm the best father, I'm the best soccer player, I'm the best neighbor. What a world we live in. Realtors are very positive. Everyone's number one.
That's right. I'm the top husband in my district right here. Right?
I don't know about you guys, but I wear a cape around my office. That's just, right. Just I don't say, you know, I'm number one, but you know, there you go. The cape.
Recognize.
The cape is, oh yeah, I have like a fan going.
It's
so that
implied.
Smart. That's fantastic.
It's implied. I've
got a metal wire built in on mine.
Well,
Mark, we appreciate it. Round two. We hope that we can get round three with you again in the future when the world is closer to being over, but you brought a lot of value today, so we appreciate you coming on the show.
Can't thank you guys enough. Happy Movember.
Thank you, gents.